the gag who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's big kick! The super sub has done it again! And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
You're listening to the MFC podcast. Our esteemed host Sparra unfortunately can't be with us this evening, so it's down to myself and Buster to keep the cup run going. But we're joined tonight by friend of the podcast and regular guest Andy Patterson. How are we doing, lads?
I'm good. Cheers yourselves.
Very good, thank you.
Very good after yesterday, and I suppose that's the obvious place to start, and probably what we'll spend most of the podcast talking about. Cup tie against Hearts. Attendance perhaps not the greatest for the Motherwell support. We can maybe talk about that a wee bit later. But a big travelling support away. You're a big away support through for Edinburgh. Many of them probably anticipating a win for their side. I know they're on a slight downturn, and both ourselves and Kilmarnock are perhaps clawing a wee bit of ground back in terms of the top six, but Hearts are still an excellent side with the likes of Berra and Suter at the back, Naismith and Lafferty up front. I wasn't in the electric bar before the game, but those who were told me that there was plenty of Hearts fans in there talking about who they wanted in the semi-final draw. So for many of them, it seemed to be a case of just turn up and get the result. But Buster, once again, we showed what we've showed so many times this season, that it's not just a Motherwell side that can compete with the likes of Hearts, but it's a Motherwell side that never says die, goes right to the full time whistle, and what a goal to win it.
Yep, you're right. As you say, I was one of those that was in the lecky, and it was actually Sparra who was telling me before I arrived that, you know, the guys next to the tables, nice enough guys they seemed, chatted away a bit later, but you know, they were talking about who they were getting in the semi-finals. And it's always good when you hear somebody, you know, that confident putting their place, basically. But as you says, it was a really strange game. I thought the first half that we were absolutely fantastic. We were well in control. Chrissy Cadden had what I thought at the time was a legitimate shout for a legitimate goal, chopped off. But if as has been pointed out to every Motherwell fan under the sun, I think if you read the letter of the law, you know, he's apparently got it under control and pulling it towards himself, and he can't kick it out of his hand there. But you know, as I say, the comedy goal for our actual first goal was, I still can't even really, I can't believe it. I can't really describe what happened. The centre half seemed to, or the guy in the front post, sorry, seemed to step over it. Goalie kicked it off his own post, and Curtis Main seemed to fall over it and it went out in the goals. As you says, very big Heart support there, so they, you know, they can be proud of themselves in that at least. But once they actually started coming into the game, I thought the crowd was, you know, sort of really getting behind them, geeing them on. But as you says, it was after Carroll McHugh's come under he's getting a bit of stick basically this year, but I don't think he'll ever do that again. What a goal that was, on his bad foot as well, you know, to take it down like that, to hit that on the volley and for it to go, the goalie got a hand to it, fair play to him, you know, but it was that far out in the top corner that he couldn't stop it. And, you know, he even started the move, he broke it up, the ball hit him in the face at one point, went out wide, and then he followed it in, so he started the move and he finished it, fantastic. And as you say, in the draw for the semi, fantastic. That's all you could ask for a game like that.
That's that. I mean, Andy, Buster mentions there the fact that we were really good in the first half. It did seem to be one of those games, the two halves, didn't it? I mean, obviously the first half we were, you know, we really came out of the traps, we went at Hearts, we put them under a lot of pressure. They looked quite rattled. The goalkeeper in particular, who I know Levine is quite keen to see in the Scotland squad when it's announced on Wednesday, you know, he didn't seem at all comfortable with the pressure we were putting them under. Buster mentions that first goal. I mean, what the guy in the front post was doing, you know, dummying the ball there, that was up there with Zach Jules for us. He's kind of clusterfuck defending last year. But obviously the second half, you know, Hearts really came into it, put us under pressure. Lafferty, you know, hits the post. Carson pulls off a save. And I suppose with, you know, those 5 minutes remaining, although we were still pushing, and although in a cup tie there's every chance that you can nick a winner, I suppose at that stage, perhaps maybe just looking to hold on for a replay.
Yeah, kind of ebbed and flowed. Again, the exactly as you say, I feel we were pretty dominant in the first half. It was one of those games. Normally, the only kind of bit I remember thinking back on was, funnily enough, McHugh, and we'd broken away maybe a few minutes before the break, and he had two or three options that he could have taken a shot himself, and he kind of delayed, and eventually lost possession of the ball, but. Even then, it wasn't when we got to half time. Such was the intensity that we were playing with and the dominance. It wasn't one of those games where you think, well, they're really going to come right back at us here, and we're really going to regret only being a goal ahead. I felt really comfortable at half time. And fair play to Hearts. I mean, they tweaked the formation. They really come back out at us, and we'd have quite a shaky wee 15-20 minute spell. We conceded the penalty, although having said that, I'm convinced that whether he was going to be fouled or otherwise, you know, Naismith was looking for it. I think everybody could see what was happening, the way it was kind of coming on. But you know, they got the equaliser, and they looked the team that were going to go on and win it. But you mentioned Carson's save; it was absolutely fantastic. The anticipation, getting down there and clawing it away. He seems to be pulling saves like that week in, week out, and it's very, very reminiscent of Darren Randolph, where, you know, how many points is he going to accrue for us over the course of a season? How many games is he going to win or help us win? But that seemed to be the turning point. I mean, we tweaked our formation ourselves, and I thought thereafter, contrary to what Levine was saying, I thought we were the better side, and then we looked the more likely side to actually win it. We weren't creating a huge amount of chances, admittedly, but you know, I felt we were more than holding our own the further and further the half was going on. And credit to Robinson. I mean, we've had the discussion, you guys have had the discussion plenty of times in the past about, you know, substitutions being required and perhaps a wee bit belated and reacting to things. But this was a reaction in a positive fashion that helped us, you know, ultimately win the game. Actually trying to win the game rather than, as Levine did, think about trying to win the game, and we got our just rewards. I felt a sensational finish, and quite kind of reminiscent of a goal that Phil O'Donnell scored against Hearts, a similar strike going back many years. So Carroll's in good company in that regard, and the scenes towards the end were fantastic. I mean, all of these stand on their feet for about the last 5-10 minutes, and it'd be nice if we could replicate that more often, but I kind of level it back in the last 10 minutes and stuff. But just fantastic. What a buzz. Great to see the celebrations in the park, and how much it meant to the players, how much it meant to the team. And just one of those kind of special afternoons that we get. And happily, we're getting more and more of them as this team works and grows together. Just a brilliant day. I think what you said there on all, Andy, rings true to me as well. I didn't feel that, you know, as you say, the first half we were under any real pressure whatsoever. And again, when you mention Levine's always probably going to come out and say that he felt his team deserved more or whatever. But there was, as you say, maybe 20-25 minutes where Hearts had all their chances, basically. You know, the stats of the match were pretty even. But, you know, if you look at that 20-25 minutes, that's where all their chances came. And for there, as you say, we changed it a bit earlier for your come on and things like that, and I did think there was maybe only going to be one team winning it after Hearts had had their three or four chances, and you know, as you say, Lafferty tried to chip the goal later on, hurt the post, had a good header saved. I just thought that, you know, that was sort of one of those things where it was shown it wasn't going to be Hearts' day, and they were there for the taking, basically.
And interesting, Andy, obviously you mentioned there about Carson's save and how good it was, and I suppose it's one of those moments where if you're going to, you know, give McHugh the plaudits for his goal, then, you know, Carson deserves some more plaudits for almost keeping us in the tie at that stage. I mean, Motherwell obviously came under a lot of pressure in the end of the January transfer window there to sell Carson. Not just pressure from Celtic, but pressure from Celtic's, you know, plants or pals or whatever you want to call it in the media. You know, we saw that age-old kind of method of the Old Firm wanting a player, and so getting the media on side to kind of pile that pressure on. The club, you know, held firm for presumably, you know, an extra couple of hundred grand. And, you know, that one save almost justifies it, because by getting to the semi-final, you know, that money is made there and then.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's a difficult position the club are always going to be put in. I mean, no matter how good a player is at Firth Park, there are always going to be suitors there, and sooner or later they're going to come up with a figure which is going to really, really tempt our club, and we're still not in a position whereby we can dismiss bids without, you know, due consideration. Now, it would appear that they were nowhere near the point where that kind of question was going to arise for the board to consider, but you reckon it's only going to be a matter of time if Carson continues in the vein of form that he is. But I've got a bit of sympathy in terms of the club's dilemma. I mean, there was things going back as well in the dim and distant where you were getting pretty poor offers for players, and you know they're having to make the kind of deliberation as could this player keep us up? Do we let him go? And that's enough to see us through financially for another couple of months without looking for credit from A, B, or C, or Well Society, or whoever the case may be. So, you know, I don't doubt it was a very difficult decision, or it will be a very difficult decision once the kind of true bid comes in for Carson's value. But, you know, certainly by dismissing it, we've definitely benefited it, both in terms of the league and the cup. He's been a terrific signing, and he just keeps going from strength to strength in a defence which is also going from strength to strength as well.
And Buster, I mentioned earlier there about the crowd. I noticed on Steelman Online in particular, I think it was also mentioned in Pine Bovril as well, and no doubt in social media, just earlier when I was having a wee look. Few critical remarks about the Motherwell crowd. I don't know the exact totals. I think the attendance was given at something around 7,500 to 8,000. You know, if you're talking about 4,500, 5,000 Hearts fans, that obviously only leaves, you know, about 3,000 Motherwell fans. We spoke about it, you know, last week in the podcast. I think Sparra had raised concerns that we might be outnumbered by Hearts fans, and I was kind of dismissive of that. I said that, no, it's a cup game, you know, it's a quarter final, a big tie, Motherwell fans will come out for it, and I expected, you know, 4,500, 5,000 Motherwell fans there. It just didn't happen. Obviously, there's a lot of reasons for that, the weather in particular. You know, not everybody lives a stone's throw away from Firth Park. Many people have been put off travelling. A Sunday kick-off, you know, obviously isn't ideal for folk. Pay at the gate is always a factor. And then, of course, you've got the fact... I just did an absolute mind blank there.
Kunsel Telly.
Aye, that's exactly what I was going for. It was I knew there was a fourth reason. On Kunsel Telly, exactly. So, I mean, obviously, everybody's got their reasons for not going. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, discussions about crowd and attendances can always crop up, you know, all the time, even with our own fans, there's mentions here or there, but it did seem to get a lot of kind of attention online, at least, you know, a lot of people really unhappy about that. My kind of take on it is that, yeah, it was a disappointing crowd, but those of us who were there got to go absolutely daft when McHugh scored, and that's all that matters. But, I mean, what's your take on it? Is it something to be concerned about, or is it just, you know, symptomatic of, you know, the situation yesterday?
I don't really think it's anything to be concerned about. You know, barring maybe semi-finals and finals, we have a sort of core support, as we always talk about. Now, I think the things you mentioned, you know, the bad weather, despite the fact, you know, Sunday, by the time I come home on Sunday, you know, my street and things had really, really thawed out. So we had a really mild sort of Sunday, but the bad weather, the being on telly, the additional £18, whatever it cost to get in there on Saturday, you know, and the other reason which I've now forgot you gave, I think they all came into play as well. So it's I don't think it's anything to be concerned about, but it's, you know, it was disappointing, to be fair, to see that, you know, we've got a quarter final against, you know, Hearts, who are a big team, you know, the fifth, sixth biggest team in Scotland, whatever you want to say. But, you know, it's a winnable game as well. I think that's one of the main reasons you'd expect people to come out to get behind the team and, you know, spur them on. But you can't say, I don't think you can say too much about it, because we've got our core support of about 3,000, 4,000 people. And I think that's just the way it's going to go. And unless, I don't even know what would change that, to be fair, because John Boyle's been trying it for 20 years, you know, and it's never really changed that much. If anything, it's maybe gone down slightly, but I don't know for sure, to be fair. But I don't think it's a cause for concern, but I'm with yourself as well. It was kind of disappointing, especially when you're looking at the TV. I didn't realise how bad it was until I watched the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And there's big gaps in that Cooper stand, big gaps in certain parts of the East stand as well. The main stand, as you were looking at it, you know, it's got its middle section, which is always kind of busy, but it was disappointing, but I don't think it's a cause for concern, to be fair.
And that's it, Andy. I mean, obviously, as I said, I'm only really discussing it mainly because, you know, the amount of attention it seemed to get in social media. In fact, on the match thread, I had a wee look through the match thread, and it seemed as though a lot more attention from a lot of people was being given to the attendance rather than the fact that we'd just scored, you know, a stunning late winner to get into the semi-finals. But, I mean, how much of that is down to the Hearts support? You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think every home side in those quarterfinals had a drastically reduced home crowd. Celtic and Rangers always do in the cup competitions. You know, it's always a running joke about the empty seats there. But Aberdeen did as well, a vastly reduced home crowd. We obviously, yep, you know, had 1,000, possibly 2,000 off what we might normally have got for a big game. So, I mean, how much, if Hearts hadn't brought through, you know, 4,500, if it had been, you know, 1,000 Hearts fans, is it really something MD would even have noticed?
I think it's quite interesting. How much you want to go into it really kind of depends. I'd imagine the club would have been disappointed. I've read a few occasions this season where Flo has tweeted about how it's been 4,000 plus home attendances, and how in the past, I'm sure this was the kind of figure, the first kind of base figure that they were looking to try and get a regular, you know, 4,000 plus crowd home support. And for it to kind of plummet after the season that we've had, I think it's disappointing for the players, given the effort that they put in, the season that they've had, particularly how well they've done in cup competitions. For us to have like a home quarter final on the cusp of another trip to Hampden, and you know the kind of home support nosedives. I mean that's something we continually, well, that's maybe pushing it a wee bit, but we're quite often asked to give details to go into databases for the club, and there's talk about amalgamating these databases and being better placed to, you know, provide facilities for supporters and such. Like, if they do have that facility ongoing, then this is maybe something that they can use to utilise to try and find out why people didn't go. You've given a number of good reasons as why that might be the case. For me, I think there's it goes to the pay at the gate element, exactly as you've said, with all the kind of home fixtures. And from the minute that the Scottish Cup ties, the League Cup ties as well, you know, were removed from season tickets, then there has been a noticeable dip in crowds. And the League Cup has never been particularly well attended.
but it nosedived as well whenever it was removed. There was a time not so long ago where you get all cup competitions included in your ticket, and I know there are people out there that they've paid their season ticket up front. That is their commitment to the club, and they don't necessarily see that having to pay for cup ties is justifiable when they've made that outlay, and that's one argument. The club will say that they'll lose money if they don't have individual payments from fans for cup ties, and that's a reasonable argument also. But the attendances, if purely you leaving all that kind of thing aside, it's down to the fact that people have to pay over and above season tickets, in my mind, for home supports. Scottish Cup games, away supports, we demonstrated it ourselves when we went to Dundee recently, took nearly 1,500 there. Now, we don't take 1,500 willy-nilly away games. We've got a pretty decent away support, but we don't take 1,500 to away games as standard. Hearts don't take 4,500 to away games as standard. So the Scottish Cup is an occasion, but it's when you're used to paying for an away game anyway, then the £18 or whatever is probably going to be seen as a benefit. You've saved £4, £5, £6 in what you would normally pay. So you're going to go because it's a cup, you're going to go because it's a bit cheaper. The flip side to that is, like, if you're not used to paying anything, as far as you're concerned, you've paid your season ticket up in June, July, August, or whatever the case is, and suddenly you've got £18 to pay for Accies, you've got £18 to pay for Hearts, then, you know, pockets don't stretch, particularly when you go back to the reasons you've already mentioned. Weather's not the best, and it's already on the telly for you to sit in the warm, then that kind of explains it in my mind. But it's the club, I think, you know, if they've got the kind of means to do so with their databases, then that's maybe a question that they want to fire out in your Welsh Society newsletters and whatever else. You know, why didn't you go if you didn't go?
No, that's a good point, actually. Aye.
I think just to sort of, you know, back that up with, I mean, a story from my mate as well. My mate's a Celtic fan. He pays a wee bit more for his season ticket, obviously, at Parkhead. Celtic was on the telly the other day, obviously, and they've been on the telly before in cup games. And every time there, I have a wee sort of, "You're at the game today, mate?" A wee dig at the, you know, the green seats and stuff. But he blatantly just comes back to me and says, "Am I fucking them any more money?" You know, he paid his Champions League tickets as well, which, I mean, I don't know what he paid for them, but I imagine they're probably at least £30 a pop. Even when it came to, you know, their game against Zenit, he said, I can't give them any more money. I've gave them so much, I've gave them this, I'm in and out of Glasgow constantly, you know. He said, I can't afford to go to these cup games, and I don't want to give them any more money. And I think, you know, it's a good point that you make, Andy, that it will come down to the money, basically, for a lot of people, and I think that's going to be, you know, pinpoint, basically.
Well, just another point from yesterday's game. Again, don't want to focus, you know, too far or too much of the podcast away from the great result. But one man who continues to perhaps grab some headlines that he shouldn't when he is in charge of games is Andrew Dallas. I've already mentioned, you know, it's been mentioned that by the rule of the law, the letter of the law, he seems to have gotten that out, ruled out goal correct when he disallowed Chris Cadden's goal. And I know what Andy's saying about Naismith maybe looking for the penalty, but for me, both seeing it back and when it happened pretty much right in front of us at that end section of the East Stand, I thought it was a stone waller. So you could argue that those two decisions he's obviously got correct, but, you know, have either of you seen anything, basically, have either of you seen anything from Andrew Dallas refereeing a football match, any football match in Scotland, that has suggested anything other than he gets a job because his dad works for the SFA?
I feel kind of bad. But no, basically no. And see the thing is, well, I actually think Hugh Dallas was a pretty decent ref. I know he got a lot of stick for certain quarters at times, but I thought Hugh Dallas at the time was a very good ref. But Andrew Dallas continues to perplex me every time I see him. Now, again, it's 100% he was, you know, letter of the law, 100% he was correct with that Cadden. Penalty as well, I would say he was correct to give it. When I was watching the highlights back, I think Cedric Kiepre gets a wee skiff on the ball as well. But I was still, you know, I still can't argue with it. There's a good penalty shout there. It was a penalty. But some of the things he done yesterday were unbelievable. The amount of times, I think he done it about two or three times where, say it was Craig Tanner at one point, skipped past a dodgy, ropey tackle into about 3 yards of space. And instead of letting the game flow and letting him make a pass, he blew the whistle, made him stop. So Craig Tanner could basically put his hand on the ball and then kick it to the guy who was going to kick it to anyway. I don't understand what the fuck he was playing at, to be honest with you. And it's wee stupid things like that that he does constantly. And I just don't see how... I don't see how he got as far as he has. Basically, everything he does seems to be questioned by MD. You can go on Twitter any weekend, and no matter what division he's refereeing in, there'll be somebody on Twitter questioning what he's doing that day.
Well, that's what I was going to say. One of the things I really noticed earlier, and that I think kind of sets him out from other referees, we all know that the standard of refereeing in Scotland isn't great. I don't actually watch a lot of football from elsewhere, so I can't comment how it stands up against, you know, the English leagues, the Italian leagues, wherever. But, you know, we've had conversations at length about, you know, Willie Colum, Craig Thompson, you know, just about every referee and how poor they are. But one of the things I noticed about Andrew Dallas was I had tweeted about Andrew Dallas this morning, just basically saying, you know, that I know that it's an easy joke to make, oh, your dad's Hugh Dallas, that's why you get a gig. But it's becoming, you know, increasingly more and more difficult not to start to believe that that's something to do with it. And I get replies not from Motherwell fans, not even from Hearts fans, but just fans from, you know, every club. And that's something that doesn't tend to happen. Basically what happens is you go onto Twitter and you whinge about the referee, and there's probably a reason for that. You know, you probably go on because you've just lost a game and you're, you know, yes, the referee's been poor, but you've got that, you know, the claret and amber tinted specs on and you're enraged by the fact that the referee maybe had something to do and you're annoyed with your team's defeat and you're annoyed with the result, and you go on and you mention it on Twitter, and then a couple of your fellow fans kind of chip in. That wasn't the case at all. We'd won. We were still jubilant. I happened to make a slight point about Andrew Dallas, and suddenly there was fans from, you know, every team basically absolutely slating him and in utter disbelief. That he continues to referee at the top level. And a lot of fans from other clubs with no real interest in our game, no real interest in who went through, absolutely slating him for the performance that he basically gave for both teams. You know, I know we'll obviously pick out the situations that involve Motherwell, but I have no doubt that there'll be Hearts fans who will look at Andrew Dallas's performance as well and say that just wasn't good enough. And it does get to a point where, as I said, it's an easy joke to make, but you know, when your dad is Hugh Dallas and you're turning in performances like that to, you know, such a regular and such a frequent basis, at what point does it start to become a concern? At what point do you start to say, well, if your dad wasn't Hugh Dallas, would you be anywhere near the top flight in Scotland?
I don't have an answer to that, to be honest with you, but as you says, it's... And again, just to go back to a point you made about referees in general and the refereeing standard or whatever in Scotland, I don't think it's any worse than elsewhere, to be honest with you. In general, there are certainly, that I see at least, many worse decisions made, or, you know, many wrong decisions made at least. But I don't think it's any worse than it is anywhere else. Just on the small bit of football I see, you know, England, Italy, I know you only mentioned that because, you know, I like Italian football, so thanks for that. But it's I don't think it's any worse than I would see elsewhere. It's just that there are wee stupid pernickety things like Andrew Dallas's career that seem to get in the way of things. And again, you know, I've no doubt the boy's not trying to be as bad as he is, but I just don't understand some of the decisions that he makes. And as I said, you can go on the internet any weekend, search for it. If you search for his name, there would be somebody who had something to say about him, whether he's refereeing Rangers, Berwick Rangers, St Johnston, whoever, you know, there's always a story out there basically every week, every time he referees.
Right, well, we'll bring when you go, Andy.
No, I was going to say, I actually find that quite interesting that you've had responses back from other fans. I mean, I don't...
pay a huge amount of attention to the games that are going on. I watch like other Scottish games, but certainly, but you know, I won't pay particular heed to the refereeing performances. But I mean, I kind of wondered in the past, was it anything to do with his father's kind of supposed allegiances with Motherwell, where he actually felt that he had to overcompensate for any kind of perceived allegations of bias, being overly generous to whoever we were playing, because he generally doesn't give us a fair crack of the whip when it comes to these decisions. I mean, examples yesterday were the kind of, it seemed to be first kind of challenges, instant yellow cards were produced for our players, where, you know, Hearts players had the luxury of committing fouls, being spoken to, committing further fouls and still not being booked. So I kind of wondered if there was a kind of overcompensation for any kind of perceived, you know, bias that, you know, maybe kind of thrown against them. But so it's quite interesting to hear that you've actually had a number of responses from people that don't have any kind of connections to Motherwell as well.
That was something I found out yesterday as well. I used to go on a Motherwell supporters bus when I was a young boy. I had no idea, to be honest, where he would have been. To be fair, I knew he grew up in Motherwell, or the DL Park area, at least anyway. So it was when somebody told me he at least used to be a Motherwell supporter and going, you know, somebody one of their buses, I was really surprised by that. But as you say, I don't know if that is the overcompensation thing as an actual thing, or if it's just, you know, maybe he's
try to find reasons for his shit refereeing.
Well, we'll steer it away for Andrew Dallas's career anyway. So Aberdeen or Kilmarnock in the next round. I believe the replay is a week tomorrow, Tuesday the 13th. Obviously, it's one of those ones. It's quite difficult to call both who's going to win that and who you would prefer. I think, you know, both of them. Aberdeen, of course, up until relatively recently, I think would have been considered, you know, outright second best team in Scotland. I think, I don't know, I've not seen a great deal of Rangers, so I can't comment on whether it's just the usual media hype or whether there's something in it, but there does seem to be this kind of groundswell of opinion that Rangers are maybe starting to take over Aberdeen in that kind of quest for the second best team in Scotland. Kilmarnock, we all know, have been fantastic under Steve Clarke. They've managed results in big, big games against both Rangers and Celtic, and then of course against ourselves, which, you know, for me had a bit of a cup tie feel to it going into it because there was so much importance about the top six placed on it. So that's a game that you could really see either team winning. I mean, Andy, I just don't know. I'm kind of looking at it from a personal point of view, having mates who support Kilmarnock and having mates who support Aberdeen and who I would like to drink with, you know, before and after the game, rather than who's actually going to win that game, because it's just a really difficult one to call. And I don't know, you know, if there is really one that stands out that we would fancy our chances against more than the other.
No, it's one of these ones we are ahead of the draw, and it's much the same. You're going to go into that, and I'm going to go into that with much the same thought as I went into the Aberdeen quarter final, as I went into the game against Hearts yesterday. It's that I have confidence in our team to cope with these occasions. Then I'm not really fussed either way who we get. What I would say, though, is I think where the worst to happen, then I think it would be more frustrating were we to lose to Killy than Aberdeen. Because Aberdeen have just got that wee bit more pedigree in terms of reaching cup finals and kind of higher league placings in recent times. So Killy, I would say, are much of a muchness to ourselves. And that would be more of a frustration and a regret were we to lose to Killy. I don't know if it would be quite so bad. But we say that without knowing how the course of the game or anything like that. But turn that on its head, either of the two of them are there to be beaten. We have beaten both of them this season, Aberdeen on more than one occasion, and hopefully a third occasion by the time we come to play them in the Cup. Kilmarnock, we beat them comfortably at Fir Park. Very unfortunate to lose our most recent fixture against them. It was a match we dominated, so I don't see that any of the two of them are going to hold any particular fears for us. We've been there for the Rangers semi-final, we've been there for the Celtic final. The occasion's not going to fluster our squad or our management in any way at all. But they're not going to freeze. I'm utterly convinced of that. So bring on either of the two of them.
I mean, that's it, Buster, isn't it? I mean, you know, we've kind of said many times this season about how good a job the likes of Stephen Robinson, Keith Lasley, and the players, of course, as well are doing. But, you know, we're sitting here. Yes, the defeat to Kilmarnock has damaged our top six hopes slightly, but we're still very much in the fight for a top six place. We're defeated League Cup finalists, and now we're 90 minutes away from a Scottish Cup final, you know, with a draw against two sides that we are more than capable of beating.
Yep. Again, I think we mentioned it last week when we says, you know, a year ago, when Robinson was appointed, if you'd say this time next year we'll be in two semi-finals at least, and pushing on a top six place, you'd have probably laughed. But going to the semi, a bit like Andy, I honestly don't really care who we play on the park. It's I actually wanted Rangers, to be honest with you. I think I said yesterday to you, I want Rangers. I may have been in a couple of hundred actually to Sparta and that, but I said I think I want Rangers here, to be honest with you, because as you pointed out, Jay, they're probably pushing, if not already, the second best team in Scotland again. But I don't think that's a bragging right, to be honest with you, especially when you see them on the telly and some of the performances, even in their convincing wins against whoever it was they absolutely hammered in the last round. They went a goal behind, I think, and
Aaron United.
They lost a goal to fucking whoever it was they played the Falkirk. Sorry, I'm terrible at their games. You know, just some of the things you see for them, you think, you know, they're no the Rangers of old, if you want, in more way than one. But it's I wanted them, but if Kilmarnock played the way they did at Fir Park, as Andy pointed out the last time they were here, I would quite happily play them. They set their stall out very defensively, got their goal, fair play to them, and they held on and they won. Again, very, very much fair play to them, but they were absolutely atrocious going forward, I thought. And I didn't see anything. Obviously, the run was there, but I didn't see anything that was proof of this magnificent unbeaten run. Again, it's obviously still in place and they're doing very well, but I didn't see anything to be afraid of, to be honest with you, with Kilmarnock. Aberdeen as well, I know. You say we had their number. We're about the semi-final, the quarter-final time, sorry. Beat them at Pittodrie as well, I think, 1-0. So, either or, it's easy enough. I don't really care, but it'll at least give me an interest in the game next week.
Well, and obviously, off the park, with Alan Burrows tweeting earlier about the new scoreboard, which is finally going to be installed ahead of the next campaign. One of the things I thought was pretty good from his tweets was the acknowledgement of the Welsh Society and just how important that is and everything that's kind of the club's doing at the moment. I mean, the Welsh Society itself, you know, announced last week that £193,719 had been raised last year, which under the Double Your Money offer from Les Hutchison means that almost 200 grand's been knocked off the debt, which I think for a club of Motherwell size is phenomenal. You know, that includes over £40,000 raised from the share sale, which was at the very tail end of the year as well. So, you know, a fantastic amount raised. Obviously, the onus is then to go better than that, you know, to go above 200,000 this year now that Les has extended his initiative until the end of 2018. So within 2 years, you know, you can see the Welsh Society knocking off, you know, 400 grand off the debt. And that's, you know, just another thing to be positive about. You factor in the off the park improvements as well. It's not just the scoreboard. We've had, you know, the refurbishments about the place. The park pitch itself looks fantastic. I mean, Andy, it's just, you don't want to get too carried away in the feel-good factor because we know how cruel football can be. Things can be tumbling down at any point. But it just seems, you know, just when you've got to the, you know, got over the last feel-good story, there's something just around the corner.
Yeah, and it's good to see that we're building on the successes that we've had both on and off the park to improve things going forward. Obviously, the more success that we have on the park, the more attractive our players become, the more income gets generated that way. But off the park, you know, there's been some worthwhile investment put in
over the last 3-4 years, which is contributing to things and allowing us to make further investments in, you know, various parts around the stadium. I mean, I noticed from Flo's tweet that they're hoping to build upon the commercial opportunities that the scoreboard will bring. So much as it's useful for us to glance up between us, through our fingers to see if it was 88 minutes, 89 minutes, and we're hanging on there, how long's left. It's got an important role to play in terms of developing income streams through sponsorship and advertising and such like there. The PEA system is going to be improved as well, I believe, so that's going to benefit things also. And the money that was invested to make our kind of facilities more attractive. I mean, I noticed you mentioned the Welsh Society that there's an event. I think, is it this week or next week, the business breakfast kind of thing?
That's the kind of the first event.
These kind of things that will draw in. Perhaps there's, you know, there maybe no initial connection to Motherwell, but having the facilities there that are of a standard that you can host these events, that you get people in and you're potentially developing new contacts, new relationships in there, and who knows what kind of business can stem from that. So it's all positive, you know, developing income streams. And as you say, the kind of nub of the thing at the moment is that we still have debts that we need to pay off, and we have the structure in place for paying off John Boyle, for paying off Les as well. And at the same time, we're kind of doing things across the stadium which are improving the facilities for the supporters as well. So it's kind of win-win all over the place, which is obviously a brilliant thing.
Yeah, no, just to confirm the details, the business breakfast, it's the 19th April, it's 7:45 a.m. in the Millennium Suite. £10, and it's just one of those, you know, another new initiative. Not necessarily new, I mean, the business club has been something that's kind of been in fruition for quite some time now. But yeah, it's that kind of, you know, another kind of attempt by the Welsh Society to kind of attract those business people who can potentially invest in the club, and the Welsh Society as well as the fans. Buster, Aki's on Saturday. You know, they're a side who obviously didn't have a game at the weekend there because we happily dumped them out of the cup in January, but they ended a bad run with a really vital 3 points at home to Partick Thistle last time out in the league. You know, again, I've said it before, it's easy to kind of get carried away and look up at the top six and how far behind of Hearts and Kilmarnock we are, but, you know, just looking at the league table here, Aki's, yes, they're 9 points behind us, but with two games in hand, so it's certainly not, you know, we're certainly still at the stage at the moment where if we're going to achieve those, you know, early season targets of staying up, then Saturday is very much a game we should be looking to win and win well.
Well, I don't disagree with you there. You know, I think when it comes to Hamilton Accies, especially at Hamilton, it's always a difficult game. And it's always a hard game, no matter how the teams are, each team's performing, but. You know, again, I don't want to say I think we're safe, but I think we're pretty much safe from relegation. But it's even out with that, you know, it's a local derby. It's going to be one of those, you know, tense affairs as it always is. There'll probably be, again, you know, 1,000 Motherwell fans making the trip across the water. So, you know, I think a win is. You know, it's something that we're all looking for. I was going to say I think a win is needed, but that's not the right word I was looking for. But again, nothing to fear. As being said, I don't think anything would faze this team. You know, you hear them speaking in their interviews after a match and things, after the matches and things like that, and you think, you know, coming up to games like, you know, the semi final, the League Cup final previously, I don't think it bothers them who these guys are playing. So I think we'll go there looking to win, and you know, I think, to be honest, we should win pretty easily.
Well, yeah, I saw on Pine Bovril earlier, I've not seen any confirmation of it, but I believe Dougie Imrie might be out for Saturday. I mean, he's obviously a player that, I don't know if he does anything in any other game. You know, he's certainly not a player that seems to win awards or, our top goal scoring charts or anything like that, but you know, he seems to be such a thorn in our sides. He seems to absolutely love playing against us. Obviously the fans really like to get tore into him. I mean, I'm kind of one of those folk, Andy, where if Dougie Emery's out on Saturday, I almost feel it's a little bit of a loss, because when you're talking about a derby, particularly the Lanarkshire derby with Accies, for me, you know, I know that maybe a lot of younger Motherwell fans kind of feel that real rivalry, but you know, for me, I still kind of, I think it's getting there, but for me, it's not quite that fierce rivalry that a local derby should be with a team like Hampton Accies, because you know, I might have been at the tail end of it, but it was always, you know, Airdrie when I was younger as well. But Dougie Emery certainly injects that kind of passion and that hatred and that vitriol that kind of goes along with good local derbies, and for me, that'll be a miss if he's out.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we're underplaying poor Dougie. I mean, you don't get your face in a trampoline unless you're something special, surely. No, I agree with you. I must admit, I would be a wee bit upset if and when they actually go down, because I do think it's a rivalry that's grown. You're quite correct, it's never ever going to be the Motherwell Airdrie levels. But there's a fierce hatred in their side of things, and I think it took us a wee while to reach the kind of level where we engaged to the point where we actually treated it like a derby. And I think it was to our detriment, some of the performances that we put in against them. But I think since last 18 months or so, there's been a greater appreciation that it's pretty embarrassing getting beat 5-0 and 4-0 with Accies. And performances and attitudes as to how we approach the game has been much, much improved, and I think results have improved accordingly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was not our old pal Andrew Dallas that had the turning point in the league game when we met them just at the turn of the year there. And until that point, we were pretty comfortable against them. We did well coming back the game where they kind of went ahead against the run of play. I don't know so much if it'll be easy. I don't really remember too many particularly easy games against them. The kind of conditions, pitch, the whole thing tends to make it a bit more of a battle. They're always up for it completely. And it's got the makings of a tough game, but it's a game I'm quite happy that we have in the back of the game on Sunday, because it is a kind of, you know, there's that local pride at stake. We've got the incentive there for chasing the top six place. We can pretty much make ourselves, I don't know if we're getting mathematically to the point where we're safe, but you know, you're not kicking the backside off it. So there's a lot of incentives there. There's people that are now chasing down semi-final spots, you know, with the opening, for example, in Carl McHugh's suspension. So there's enough there to make sure, or that should make sure, that we're going in with the right attitude, no complacency, and hopefully we will take care of them. But in terms of the kind of rivalry, I do quite enjoy the kind of Lanarkshire derby. As you say, it's never going to be the Airdrie thing, but you know, it felt pretty special last season when we went there and beat them, you know, with Molt's goal. Obviously, there was the relegation kind of angle as well, but the fact that it was then that we were overtaken, and it had the kind of big impact on them. Ultimately, they stayed up anyway with the playoff, but the fact that it was going to be them that were involved and not us was just, you know, added a wee kind of icing in the cake. But no, it's one I'm looking forward to this weekend, certainly.
And I think that my... you know, my comments of we'll win quite easily, or maybe just me getting a bit sort of overhyped in a semi-final spot. And, you know, they sold two of their better players to Rangers, and I think the other one went to Aberdeen, did they not? You know, so it's one of those games where I think we will win. I think it might be pretty comfortable. But, as you say, they're never easy, to be fair, these games.
And I suppose one of the things that comes out of these games, more often than not, at Accies, it's not just the bragging rights on the park, but there's often the bragging rights off the park, with Motherwell fans always taking great delight in, you know, the shots, the images of the away stand behind the goal and bragging about how we've outnumbered the Accies fans. Are we going to have, you know, big enough brass necks to do the same after Saturday, considering we were just outnumbered by Hearts fans in a quarter final?
Of
course we are.
Hearts won't care about that. You know, as you say, that's gone. That's in the past. You don't speak about the past.
Right, well, I think that just about covers it. So we've managed to stumble through. Cheers, Buster, and cheers, Andy.
Pleasure.
Right, well, we'll be back at some point next week, presumably with Sparra. I think on the agenda will be, obviously, a good win in the Lanarkshire Derby. No doubt some bragging about how we outnumbered them in their own ground and previewing the upcoming Celtic game the following Sunday. I think we're also going to be taking a bit of time to talk about the Motherwell Makes Music Festival that's going to be in a few venues in the town that week, as well as having a wee chat about the OBFA and its almost inevitable repeal. So until then, cheers. Waistcoat.